right. So shall we get stuck in?
Yep. Quicker we start, the quicker we can get it over with.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. So welcome, everybody, to the very latest Bolt from the Blue podcast after a very, very dispiriting 5-2-2-5 loss against Leicester. It's not as if we didn't see this coming, because it's Leicester and it's Vardy. But we're going to get into it. And of course, as usual, I've got my two bros here. And the first one is Mr. Prestwich Blue, Colin Savage. Colin, how are you doing? Hope you're not too glum after that result.
I'm a bit glum, but I should have been at a wedding in the States yesterday. So that kind of rubbed it in a little bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We also have Ray from City Fan TV. How are you doing, Ray? Has your, you know, your blood temperature, you know, normalized?
Yeah, it's been a tough all day. It's obviously nice to win, and it's hard the day or two after you lose. And when you get stuffed like we did, it's even harder.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, not that you need reminding, but here were the lineups. Of course, Leicester started with Schmeichel, Castagna, Daniel Amarty, Evans and Soyuncu were the centre-back partnership. Justin Pratt, Tielemans, who I thought was really good. Another Mendy, not our Mendy. I wish we had this Mendy. Barnes and Vardy, of course. And for us, well, it's an interesting lineup. Ederson, Walker, Garcia, Nathan Ake, Mendy, Fernandinho, Rodri, Mahrez, De Bruyne, Foden and Sterling. I'm not quite sure, Colin Savage, that there was that much wrong with the lineup from the players that Pep had at his disposal. I think it's more a question of how he deployed them. I mean, I was just a bit, I think after 10 minutes, everyone was reminded of the fact that Philip Foden is that's not his best position, Strand out there on the left. And what did you think?
I don't think anyone was in the best position. I don't understand why we went with two holding midfielders when we're at home playing Leicester, number one. So I didn't see the need for Rodrigo and Fernandinho in there. KDB is usually better, kind of slightly out on the wing. Sterling isn't a centre forward.
That's true.
So, you know, I appreciate our injury list was somewhat grim. Obviously, Aguero's not ready. Gabriel Jesus has been managed to get himself injured. And perhaps we'll come on to the whole injury situation later in the pod. But I don't think anyone, I mean, Mahrez was probably the only one who was in a position you'd call familiar to him. So to me, it was a very strange.
Well, Colin, I mean, the thing about the defensive pivot in midfield of Rodri and Fernandinho is it worked against Wolves, and we do have a shaky defence. So Pep's going to say, you know, that's why we have those two back there. What's your take, Ray?
I didn't mind having Fernandinho and Rodri, as you quite rightly say. It worked against Wolves, especially in the first half. And for about half an hour, it worked against Leicester as well, probably a bit longer than that. I wasn't at all happy with the false nine, playing Sterling up front. I thought that was totally wrong. We don't have experienced strikers in Gabriel Jesus and Sergio Aguero, both injured, but we have a young lad, 17 years old, absolutely buzzing. He told us so himself, he's buzzing after the game against Bournemouth, scored a cracking goal, played really well. The guy, his confidence is probably as high as it's going to be. He's so excited. Chuck him in there. Big lad. He's going to throw himself around a bit. Chuck him in there and let's see what he can do. At least you'd have been playing with a centre forward. You could have put Sterling on the left, which he's been playing for a season and a half. You could have put, I think, Foden on the right. You'd have had three players up front who are young, exuberant, full of energy, who would have worked really hard. Foden would have run himself into the ground for us. I just think that would have been miles better than putting Mahrez in and messing about with Sterling and Foden in such a way. Leicester had five at the back, And they were not giving us any space or any time and double teaming us out wide. No, for me, it was, you should have started with Delap and see how it goes. If that doesn't work, or the kids overawed or whatever, then you can change things around. And at least the lad's got some height, and the first cross that came in, got his head on it and hit the bar. So I think that was a mistake from Pep. As I said, I don't mind the Fernandinho. We'll come on to it later. Obviously, taking Fernandinho off and leaving Rodri on. The rest of the team, we didn't have the personnel. We didn't have any choice in who we played. With Stones going out injured, was it the day before the game or whatever? That forced Garcia to start. And basically, I think we were down to 12 or 13 fit first teamers. And, you do your best that you can. And, players were playing like Mendy, who played his, ended up playing his third game in a week, which I think is more than he can handle. But we have, as Pep says, it is what it is. You just got to get on with it.
Mm-hmm. Colin Savage, Leicester's formation, pretty predictable. It was a 5-4-1. They had Dennis Pratt on the right and Harvey Barnes out on the left. And City were actually not that bad for the first 20 minutes. A little bit toothless, perhaps, until the goal. Unfortunately, that goal by Mahrez basically encouraged him to keep trying that, trying to score a worldie like that pretty much for the rest of the game. But it didn't look so bad in the first 20 minutes. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no. Because what I tweeted was, after about 15 minutes, my tweet was, we're playing so well, but it's clear many of our players haven't hit their stride yet. I can't wait till they do. And in a sense, we played well on one level. We were pressing. Everything seemed to be going well. But in another sense, we weren't actually doing press. We weren't creating anything. Some of the players looked very rusty. None of them were, apart from that goal from Mahrez, there'd been no real standout moments. We had a couple of other chances. Rodrigo had a shot that went just over, and Sterling put a fairly weak shot into Schmeichel's arms. But there was something that we were doing things right in terms of the pressing, but we weren't right in terms of the players, if that makes sense. And I felt that in the Wolves game as well. I may have said the same thing. We played well as a unit, but we didn't. Some of the players, you could look at some of the players and say, many of the players and say, I don't actually think he had a great game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Ray, we've got to seize positives where we can find them. They're not that many, but it was a beautiful goal from Mahrez, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, he slapped that one in with his right foot. And Schmeichel had no chance. You've got to say it's a world, even though I think he was inside the box. But hitting it with his right foot right into the far corner. It was an absolute cracking goal after just a few minutes on the clock. And people who'd said he shouldn't have started, people tried to throw egg on their faces. Someone tried that at me because I said he shouldn't have started. But having said that, he proved to me why he shouldn't have started after that, because he didn't really do that much. But hey, look, we got that early goal. I think for the first 20, 25 minutes, Leicester really didn't get into the game. We controlled it, 65, 70% possession or whatever it was. We didn't really create much. And that's something, it swings and roundabouts. So part of me thinks we should have created something. We'd got the lead and maybe we were sitting on it a little bit. We weren't really busting a gut trying to break them down and give it everything. Because we had the lead. On the other hand, you can turn around and say, well, if there was a Roberto Mancini side, generally, you get 1-0 up and you're going to hold that. You're going to make sure you're defensively sound and strong, because you don't technically need to score another goal. But with this City side, it's 1-0 is never a comfortable scoreline. Neither is 2-0 these days. It seems you've got to go and get more goals, and I don't think we have the urgency to do that. We certainly weren't clicking, but that first 20-25 minutes, we controlled the game. As I said, with all that possession, all that passing, some of it pretty toothless because we weren't going anywhere, but Leicester weren't in the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, Colin Savage, we actually had a goal disallowed on 35 minutes. That's the free kick from De Bruyne. And obviously, Rodri went a bit early and was offside. That sort of ushered in that piece of bad luck, ushered in the beginning of what I thought was a pretty dismal rest of the game. I mean, just a minute later, then you get the first penalty, and I think it was Walker with his hands on Vardy. Yep. Was the wrong side of him. I mean, it's just I don't know.
Well, I mean, I was watching that. I was watched that goal a few times, and what got me is something that kind of gets my goat anyway is our lack of, I don't know what you call it, composure, organisation, when we're on the back foot, when we're defending, because we'd had plenty of time to organise ourselves. It wasn't particularly a breakaway move from Leicester. We had plenty of men back, and yet we were like headless chickens. No one seemed to know where they should be. Walker shouldn't have been. Walker was obviously there, but there was a man out on the wing who Walker should have been watching. Where was one of the central defenders should have been watching Vardy? And it was just so painful watching it in the complete lack of organisation. All right, Walker picked up Vardy, but he's never had his body shape right. He was never in the right position. And we were so reactive. And Vardy's, was it a penalty? Yeah, it was a penalty. In the modern game, that's a penalty. But Vardy is so good at getting those sort of penalties. He's so quick. He gets himself between the defender and the ball, and he makes the most of what comes his way. Wish we could do that a bit better, to be honest. But watching the build-up to that goal, we had plenty of time to shape ourselves and get organised, and people pick up the runners. And it was just a shambles, and it's painful to watch. And they put Walker probably lucky not to get a red card for denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, to be honest.
Yes, Ray, I think Colin has put his finger on it there, because there seems to be a real lack of communication between the various members of that back four. And it's hardly surprising, is it? Because that back four has just been changing, week by week, and that's going back to last season, of course. And I don't know. I don't know what Garcia is doing in there. He shouldn't be in the team for me. But I suppose we're sort of.
I'd rather have Fernandinho in there.
Yeah, Taylor Harwood Bellis even for me. You just I don't know. It's just you don't have a player that wants out in there. But I suppose that I don't know. Maybe it's just because he's I don't know.
It's not
rising young Catalan star. Well,
I think it's a couple of things, Matt. One, we don't have a choice. Really, honestly, we don't have much of a choice. And second, maybe they're still hoping that they can turn his head around. I'm probably not thinking there's much chance of that. And probably that's just a red herring that I'm throwing in there that I was thinking a couple of weeks ago. But it's a difficult one. The problem is you've hit the nail on the head with this communication, Malarkey. And I saw a series of tweets from a chap, I forgot his name, sadly. My apologies to him, where he's just showing the lack of communication at the back on so many goals that we've conceded in the last several months, including the Lyon one and some others, where people are stepping up when someone else is playing other people on side, attackers on side. And it's happening tight. He showed about six or seven of these. And it was just ridiculous to see the defensive line. A goal against Arsenal in the FA Cup, we had three men all around, Aubameyang on one side. Three men, and he still got free because it was put down the side. And it's so often, our back line is not a straight line. It's a zigzag. It's extremely frustrating to see the lack of communication. We play so many different players at centre-back, for instance. Just looking at last season, we finished the season mainly with Garcia and Laporte, but at times we had Otamendi in there, at times we have Stones. I think this is one of the gripes of a fair few City fans. They'll say Liverpool, Van Dijk was playing tonight for Liverpool. I think that's his 92nd consecutive league game. Okay.
You knew what that back four was going to be tonight. It was going to be Robertson, Alexander-Arnold, Van Dijk and Gomez. unless any of them are injured.
You know this, and you know nine of the Liverpool 11 before the game starts, pretty much. You know Alisson's going to be in goal. You know you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold. You know you've got Van Dijk. You see the Matip or Gomez, and then you've got Robertson. And up front, you know who's going to be up front. In midfield, you know you're going to have Henderson and Fabinho. And that's nine players. And then, you know, and in your defence, you know, it's either Gomez or Matip. In your other midfield spot, it's usually either Keita or maybe the Ox or maybe something. But, you know, you know your 9 of your 11 players. And at City, we said it last season, you know, far too often, you know, if you try to pick a City side, you're looking to get more than 7 or 8 because it's just chop and change. And you never get that proper level of communication. You never get that... control. You know, you never have someone who knows they're going to be playing every game, and so they can help somebody else through the game. And you know, even when we had Laporte there, what looking at some of these still photographs where he was at the back, he wasn't communicating, he was making mistakes. You know, and so the leadership isn't there. I did a video today. I'll briefly mention it about what the reasons why City won't win the league if they carry on the way they're going. And it's things like leadership that are missing. It's things like capitulating under pressure. You know, when we start getting on the back foot, we're all over the shop. We saw it against Wolves all over the place. We saw it against Bournemouth in the Carabao Cup. When they scored their goal, we had seven men in the box. And at no point did we look like we were going to get the ball off them. They might have had three or four. We just don't know where to go. And it is actually a shambles. So it was frustrating, but the lack of communication. Walker, I'll finish on this point. Walker, in less than 10 games, he's had the Arsenal FA Cup semi-final where he switched off and didn't know Aubameyang was behind him, and Aubameyang scored a very good goal, but you know Walker should have at least known he was behind him. Switched off. Lyon, he was looking at Kone, he was his man. Didn't realise he was playing everybody else in the middle onside. And then when he did turn around, Corny legged it down the pitch. Walker just dawdled and jogged back, and Corny scored. So there's two, and then this one as well. So how many times is he switching off? And it used to be that you'd think Walker might switch off 1, 2, 3 times a season, probably just once or twice in a big glaring error. And now that must have been, as I said, 3 in about 8, 9, 10 games. It's far too much. It's far too often. And it's happening all over our defence.
Yeah, I mean, specifically, Colin, it's this inability to defend a quick long ball into the channels. And you'd think they'd had enough practice with that by now, wouldn't you?
Well, yes, you'd think so. But you wonder what, you know, everything seems to be focused on moving the ball forward. And nothing, none of the coaching seems to be focused on what happens when we haven't got the ball and we have to defend. And Ray just summed it up for me. There was no composure. You know, we're like headless chickens when we have to face a team with the ball at its feet, and particularly one like Leicester who move it quickly. But you know, it's just, I just said it, it's painful to watch. How long can it go on? And it's my one criticism of Pep, because when we knew it was coming, I started reading up about him and to understand how the way he plays. And I've said this before, there was an article about how he manages defensively. And the theory was one man goes to the man with the ball and the other defenders screen him. So in case the man with the ball gets through. But you watch us on that first goal, first Leicester goal. There is no semblance of organisation or no semblance of anyone knowing what they should be doing or who they should be marking. And it was the same for the second goal as well. What are we doing defensively? It's all right having the ball for, you know, we had 77% possession on Sunday. In the 23% that Leicester had, we fell apart. It's just ridiculous. And I think the other thing which Ray touched on is that, you know, when Leicester got that equaliser, you couldn't see us coming back. And suddenly when they went 2-1 up, you knew that we were throwing the towel.
Yeah. There's no one there. There's no one there to pull us together.
Yeah, it's interesting. The second goal came just after that substitution, a very un-Pep-like substitution, but I'm not sure whether you think that he took off the wrong player. He should have taken off Rodri instead of Fernandinho, but took off one of the pivot, as I said, I think the wrong one, and then brought on Liam Delap. What did you think, Colin?
Well, was Pep admitting he'd made a mistake in the first place by not playing Liam Delap? It was unusual for Pep to make a change so early into the second half. It was like just a few minutes old. But taking Fernandinho off, I said it many, many times last season. People, a lot of City fans said we lack leadership, we didn't replace Kompany. And I think it was a bit of a disservice to Fernandinho. They don't realise the role he played in our team in that Centurion season, that formidable season. I've said this countless times on the pod, and I hope people aren't totally bored with me. Nicolas Otamendi, in that Centurion season, he played 35 out of 38 league games. Stones played, I think, 20-odd games. In the formidable seasons, both of them played a decent number of games. I think by then, Otamendi was down the pecking order. Left back, we had a combination of Ben Mendy getting injured, using Delf and Zinchenko. So sometimes that season, a lot of that in that Centurion season, especially before Laporte joined us in January, we had Stones, Otamendi, and either Mendy, Delph, and Zinchenko in our back four. We weren't overrun. We weren't getting hammered. We weren't making so many mistakes that we were getting pummeled like this. We got by. We did more than get by. We were under blooming points. And that's with a combination of the press we had, the fact that we would not give teams that much possession. We wouldn't let them have quality ball. And we had Fernandinho. And formidable season, we had Fernandinho. Last season, Fernandinho's in defence. We have Rodri, a different kind of player. For whatever reason, Pep's gone down this route. He tried it with Jorginho. He didn't get him because of Napoli. And he's ended up with Rodri, who's a similar player to Jorginho. They're passers. They're passers. They're not defenders. And, you know, Fernandinho does screen the back. He knows where the danger is, and he senses it and he snuffs it out at source very early. Occasionally he'll take a yellow, fair dues, he'll take one for the team, but he's snuffing out the danger. Rodri doesn't do that. So to take Fernandinho off, it was just like, hang on, Leicester are now, they can sense we're vulnerable. You can see it. And they were getting a lot more encouragement. And then to take off our screen, to take off the man in the middle that we need for when we lose the ball, I couldn't believe that, and to leave Rodri on. And for me, I would have left them both and tried to regroup and re-establish our possession-based game and hope that we'd create. But you know, I couldn't believe it. I was flabbergasted, and it didn't take too long for Leicester to punish us. And it just seemed every time they got the ball, it felt like they were going to create a chance, and usually a very good chance, and a goal-scoring chance.
Colin Savage, it was actually 1 minute later that Leicester scored. Tell us about that one, and how much would you put it on Garcia? It was a nice little piece of skill, I think, by Vardy, but you tell us what you thought of it.
Well, it kind of brings back the point about defensive organisation, because I'm not... Garcia, yes, he could. I think he probably could have done better. But again, I watched that goal a few times, and the fullback Castagne, he got free on the right unchallenged, and Rodri just stood and watched him. Didn't go with him at all. That left Ake in no man's land, and Ake had to make the decision whether to go to cover Castagne or to kind of cover the inside. He didn't really do anything. So Garcia, the ball was played in because Castagne wasn't under any sort of pressure at all, because Garcia was in Ake was in no man's land. But Rodri had left him in that mess a little bit because he just stood and watched. It was a great piece of skill by Vardy. You know, Aguero type skill that was. Garcia, yeah, could have done better. Didn't put in too much of a challenge. But let's give a bit of credit to Jamie Vardy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the seeds of that goal were sown a few seconds early.
Yeah.
Again, by lack of organisation.
Mm-hmm. When the goals come against City, they come in twos and threes, and it was only 3 minutes later, Ray. I'm just checking. 3 minutes later from that Vardy goal, Garcia concedes the penalty. Now, I actually like the way he looks in that skull cap. But that's just a bit of naivety there. What did you think?
Well, maybe he took that skull cap too far, knocking Vardy over in the box. In rugby, you might get away with it, but certainly not in football. The sad thing was, Garcia had a pretty decent game that first half. Played really well. I mean, I'm over in France watching it on French TV, and at half time, the player they were showing him highlights for was Garcia. To show how well he'd done in shepherding people, being in the right place at the right time. And that first half, it felt like the Garcia that I'd first seen play in America 3 seasons back on the preseason tour, you know, where he was just so calm and assured. He knew where the danger was, and it was the same kid from back then. Second half, yes, he was a bit more all over the shop. And you can say it's a bit clumsy, it's a bit unlucky. I don't know what you want to say. But once again, we were caught ball watching. Daydreaming. I don't know what adjective you want to use, but it's all the same. We're not focused. And it's a huge worry because, you know, in this game, we've given 3 penalties away, other numerous chances, not been focused, not got our minds on the ball, on the game and the player, and sometimes just watching the ball. And if you remember that Wolves game, John Stones had a pretty good game, but he got caught out twice ball watching and not focused on the player and what's going on. So it's a worry that our defenders are doing this on a regular basis. And I don't know what it is. Is it something we're feeding them? Because it seems to be a disease that's going through our camp.
Well, I tell you what, Colin, Vardy really has some incredible street smarts. He knows how to win a penalty, and he takes a good penalty as well. In fact, yeah. He scored 9 times against Guardiola's Man City, and nobody else has scored more than 5. He's a good option to have, and I wish we had him sometimes. What do you think about Vardy?
Yeah, he's always caused us problems because he's quick, he can work on his own. And what I said about Vardy, he is very deadly when he has the ball at his feet. So I think his conversion ratio is better than most. You know, so 10 times, if he's got the ball kind of one-on-one, 10 times he'll score. And it's incredible. You know, at his age, he's still got the pace and he's still got the ability. I think he's very underrated. You've got to play him in the right system. Leicester play him in the right system. And I also wrote about that goal that was a Vardy penalty because he's so good at getting himself at the right moment between the ball and the defender.
Oh, he's an expert. Yeah, he really, really is.
You know, he wins those penalties. It's not that we give them away. He wins them. And that's not to put him down. I mean, he did have a thing a few seasons ago where he had that trailing leg thing that he got away with rather too much, to be honest. But, you know, he's so good at he's so quick, he's so clever. He got himself into a position where Garcia basically had no choice but to barge into the back of him, and it was a penalty again.
And
cleverly won.
With the way things are going, I think it would be a pretty smart bet to put money on this season as being a record-breaking one for penalties given. Because it's getting a bit silly. Anyway, they were soft penalties. I thought. I mean, both could have done better there, but it was what it was. I'm just struggling for little positive things, you know, to feed on. And again, we had this situation where not much was coming via crosses into anybody standing in front of the Leicester goal. But I mean, there was one little thing that happened. It was the 64th minute and Delap hit the bar. And I think that was the first time that he received anything that he could feed off. Did you see that, Ray?
Yeah, it was a Mendy cross. I mean, I've been critical of Mendy for a while now. You know, I actually was so excited for the guy when he came. Last season, I kept saying, give him time, he needs a run, he's not been fit, you know, he's had all these injuries. But his crosses from, you know, being awesome, even De Bruyne-esque, I would say, in the first 2 seasons, they're hit and hope crosses, yeah? Far too many. And some of them, far too many, are actually woeful, too high, too long. This one, actually, he put it bang on the money, in the box, and you know, Delap got his head to it and just hit the top of the bar. And he says, you know, it showed that we can do something differently. And in all those, so many games where we've been struggling to break a team down and create, and when we've been pumping the ball into the box for our, you know, giant centre forwards and attackers like Raheem Sterling, who's probably shorter than me, he's probably about 5'7", Aguero's about 5'9", David Silva's, you know, probably something similar. Bernardo Silva's no taller. Now, all these midgets that we've got up there, and Gabriel Jesus, who actually scores more with his shoulder than with his head. So, you know, I always question why we're pumping them in for our tiny forwards. And when we got the opportunity, I don't actually think we pumped much in for or enough for Liam Delap, or at least it shows, you know, we could offer something different. And I just want to go back briefly to that Vardy second goal, where he got across at the near post to score. It was a cracking goal, and you've got to give him credit. I just don't think Garcia expected you know, him to do anything from the angle he was. But in the first half, KDB put a wonderful cross in, similar sort of area. And we had three guys in the box, and nobody came to the near post. No striker. You'd have expected Sergio Aguero to come to the near post, or a proper striker to have come to the near post and tried to pick that up. But we had somebody, you know, they're all in the middle of at the far post. And it's just that, you know, at that point you think, we needed a striker. And, you know, Liam Delap, yes, he hit one onto the crossbar with his head in the second half. But I was just thinking, you know, if he was playing in that first half, would he have come across that near post to have a chance? But obviously it wasn't to be.
The last thing that we needed, Colin Savage, was to be hit with a worldie. I seem to remember this happening before. Not only conceded penalties, but then someone has a worldie, and that was one from James Maddison, wasn't it?
Yes. But again, you know, I watched that goal two or three times, and again, it's the same story, and I'm sorry if I'm getting boring, but we had time to close him down, and no one was doing anything to close him down. And yes, it was a great shot, absolutely unstoppable, but you've got to make it difficult for him, and no one did. Again, we were like just headless chickens. No, you know, someone should be going to the ball. Someone should be back, you know, should be players backing up the man who's going to the man with the ball. And none of that happened. Everyone's looking around, wondering who's going to do what, and no one seems to know. And yeah, it was a cracking strike, but you know, why didn't we close him down?
Yeah, Garcia, you could see him just backing up.
Yep. That is my biggest bugbear with us defensively. And you see it when the opponents have a corner, for example, and the ball gets flung in and it gets headed out. And there is no one coming out to close down. Everyone's looking at everyone else. I just don't know what we're doing defensively, coaching-wise.
Pep doesn't really do defence.
Mark Hughes didn't do defence or couldn't do defence. And when Roberto Mancini came in, the first thing he did was tighten us up defensively. Mm-hmm. All right, we weren't that exciting to watch for a short while, but once he got the defence right, he could then build on that. Now, obviously, that's not Pep's philosophy, but you've got to be able to coach what you do with the 30% of the game where you don't have the ball. You've got to be able to instill that mentality, the leadership. It's almost like, you know, in the army, you're just conditioned to respond to orders. That's the way they do things. That's the way they train you. But it's almost as though no one knows what they're doing. And I say time and time again, you watch the goals that we concede and there is a complete lack of organisation or you know, system or plan.
Ray and
or
my
even individuals taking some responsibility.
Ray, in my continuing quest to pull little pieces of hope out of this dross, at least we got to see Nathan Ake put one in. It's nice to know that we do have a little bit of a goal threat, at least from corners. Now, Stones is obviously injured again, but obviously Ake got up quite well. The Leicester defence had been performing really, really well up to that point, but he just got between them and nodded it in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was the corner swung in quite nicely, and I think we had a couple of players who could have got that ball, and it was just Aki got there first, and he put it in the corner and got his goal. That's the positive one, but can we get back to the negatives?
Yeah, we can, because just when you were thinking that we might be on for a kind of a Chelsea-like comeback, then Mendy happened. Another brainless tackle, this time on Maddison. Another penalty, Colin Savage. I think I put in a tweet. I'm a bit done with Mendy, personally. I'm just not seeing what he's contributing. I know that Pep has got virtually no other option at the moment, but I would have played Zinchenko instead of him, because he's offering not much going forward, and he's a liability when people are running at him. Where do you stand on the Mendy debate, Colin?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, he isn't producing the goods we thought he was going to do at the moment. And, you know, in a top team, you've got to be ruthless. You know, we don't have a left-back we can rely on. You know, perhaps if Cancelo hadn't been injured, then we'd have played him in there, because we know he's better defensively, maybe not quite as good. Not quite as good in the... Actually, I don't think he is. I don't think you can say he's not quite as good going forward. He goes forward in a slightly different way to Mendy. He tends to go inside. But, you know, to be at the stage where we haven't got a settled left, but I think we have to be ruthless. So, you know, we're at 17 foreign players. There's talk of Zinchenko making way for a left-back. But why are we still in that situation?
It's incredible to think that Gael Clichy has been our best left-back in the last 10 years, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's making Wayne Bridge look a decent left-back.
No,
Danny Mills, you know.
Oh, no, please, no. There's a limit, Colin. There's a limit.
Yes, I was being a bit...
But all three penalties were conceded with one of their attackers' goal side of the defender.
Yeah.
That's the most basic defensive error that you can make.
Well, that's a sense of paying attention. I've got to say, in Cancelo's defence, I mean, I've been beating his drum this week, because what I've said is, the thing with Cancelo is, when he's attacking, he can go on the outside. We've seen him go on the outside, get to the byline, okay, then he has to cut back a bit and then pass with his right foot. But we've seen him go on the outside, we've seen him go on the inside, cut inside, and have a shot shooting. He needs a bit of practice with his right foot. His left foot, I think, for his country, he's got a cracking goal not too long ago. But for me, he can go on inside or outside. He can dribble, he can get past people, and he can pass pretty well. Mendy can't do pretty much all of that. And that's what frustrates me with Mendy. He struggles to control the ball half the time. And most of what Mendy does is pass the ball backwards and pass the ball inside. Now, half the time he passes it inside, he loses it. And when you're playing such a high line as we are, and when you've got so many advanced players, if you make a mistake with the pass, there was one occasion where I think he made a mistake. He cut out either KDB or whoever he was who was passing to, and himself, because he was on the side. And he basically left two or three Leicester players free, who could then advance. They were ahead of KDB, and they had the ball because of his mistake. Sometimes he does some great passes, sometimes he does some poor ones, and every poor one puts us in under tremendous pressure straight away. So for me, Cancelo is offering a lot more. Mendy's offering us nothing. Defensively, he's poor, he looks slow, he looks unfit, he's making mistakes, he's not aware of what's going on, and attacking wise, what's he offering us? I think very little. And this is another concern of mine. And someone brought this up, and you know, I've said it about Mendy, but on Walker as well. They say, the thing is, defensively, they're making mistakes. But Pep's got them for our wide men, for the attacking, you know, going down the line, adding an extra body to our attack, providing some creativity. But they're not actually doing that, Walker and Mendy. Walker's doing a bit more. He's got that pace, he's got that power, and he can get past his man and put a cross in. But generally, the crosses they're putting in are not good enough. So you ask yourself, what are they there for? If especially Mendy, if you're not defending very well and you're not offering us anything going forwards. Why don't we just get somebody else? Either just be pragmatic and get a defender who can defend, or get a proper a winger who can do all the tricks that you need on the wing. And if you think Sterling's not doing it, and you, why do you need Mendy to be out there galloping on and doing everything? Get a proper a winger. I don't understand it. Or, you know, if Mendy's not doing it, just go out and get a young lad who's primarily a winger and defends as well as Mendy, but offers a lot more going forward.
Here's a quotation from Jamie Vardy after the game. It's quite revealing. He said, "We knew we wouldn't have much of the ball, so we set up to infuriate them a bit and try and keep the likes of Rodri off the ball. Then, when we won the ball, we wanted to break through their counter-press and get at their defensive line. And today it worked a treat. We weren't worried at 1-0 down because we knew if we stuck to our plan, we'd create chances ourselves. And we just happened to put them all away. So, happy days." Colin, do you think that City have now lost, you know, the aura, you know, when teams would come to the Etihad and think, "Oh, we're likely going to get a tanking here." Do you think that those days are gone?
Yes, I do, because I've always said about that the Premier League is you'll get a team who'll come along and do something different. Look at Sheffield United last season. But we paid the price of our success. So, teams would come to the Etihad and be scared of us. But also, the Premier League doesn't stand still. You get found out. If you don't, you know, if you don't change, if you don't adapt, then teams work you out, because there's a lot of good managers in the Premier League. Brendan Rodgers is one of them. And we have been found out, because teams now know if you put five across the back, the chances are we will not break you down. And the chances are that you will get chances. And you know, we saw that in the semi-final against Arsenal.
Ray, Colin. Let's just you mentioned Rodgers there, and he was quite funny, obviously, after the game, because obviously Pep was, you know, really miserable and almost monosyllabic. Brendan, on the other hand, gave about 15 interviews, and he was giving us a great insight into his tactical genius. Anyway, Ray, here's the quote from Brendan Rodgers. "To beat Manchester City, you've got to run like hell. That's the first thing. You've got to have that mentality. I thought our tactical discipline was very good. We condensed the pitch in our half, and then in the right moments, we pressed the game. Of course, because of the counter-press, you've got to get your passes off quickly, and we know we've got speed if we can do that. I thought we stayed calm when we went 1-0 down and had the better chances towards half-time. It was a brilliant result and performance. It's taken me about 13 years to play that way as a manager, and I'm obviously very much about being attacking and pressing. I'm always positive, but I feel like I need to think of other ways to get results in some of these games. We didn't press the goalkeeper because he's as good as any centre half in the league and he takes people out of the game. The plan was to bring the game into our half, make sure we were tight, bring Jamie back to block off one of the midfield players, that's Rodri, And then you've got to be very good in the transition period to make two or three passes and get round the counter press." So interesting words from Rodgers. But I think, as Colin says, Ray, we've been worked out. And it's interesting that Brendan said, "I'm always positive, but I feel that I need to think of other ways to get results in some of these games." Do you think that Pep needs to take a leaf out of Brendan's book?
You can say whatever you like. Pep ain't going to listen. Pep has plan A, and Pep's plan B is to do plan A again.
Oh, he's so stubborn. He's stubborn.
Well it's just that when Pep does try and find other ways, that they're usually wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually completely left field, like, you know, like playing Gundogan as an old-fashioned right half at Anfield in the Champions League. And,
yeah.
You know, some of his stuff is baffling. You know, you understand that he's changed it, but you don't understand why he's changed it to what he's changed it to.
But Colin, sometimes he does come up with some remarkable different ideas. But the thing is, I've said, it's small margins. And, you know, when it works, you're a genius. And when it doesn't, you're a fool. And yesterday was one of those foolish ones. You know, his plans didn't work. And when they come off, he's a genius. So sometimes you feel other managers don't get the same credit. You know, Brendan Rodgers has done something. He's been pragmatic. And they've pumped us 5-2.
But that's what's going to happen to us, isn't it? Teams are coming to, because of the success we've had, because of the fear we instilled in teams, that they're coming to us and being much more pragmatic. Yep. You know, they're playing, sorry, a couple of seasons ago with Burnley. Sean Dyche had them pressing from the front, which Burnley don't normally do. But he had them doing it quite well. It didn't work. But, you know, they tried it. And teams now are basing, you know, are coming to the Etihad or and playing a game that they maybe wouldn't normally play, even as an away team, because it's us. But the problem was, you know, when you burst the bubble of invincibility, everyone then picks up on it.
Everybody knows. Mm-hmm. We lost 10 points at home last season, I think. Was it 10 points? And that's more than we lost in the previous two seasons. You can see it coming. You can see the change. And as I said earlier, and I said last season, that teams are having more possession against us. They're having more passes against us. And once you're getting more possession, more passes, instead of rushing the pass, which a lot of teams would play 5-4-1, when they get win the ball up as in their third, they have two or three passes and then launch it because they're under pressure from our press. We're not pressing as much as either. They'd launch it, we get the ball back and we start again. But now teams are having more possession, more quality possession, and that gives them more opportunities and more chances. And they're breaking through really well, and they're having more attempts at our defenders. And our defenders are not exactly the best. If you think about it, they're not the best one-on-one. They're not the best at all. They're better when you've got the Fernandinho screen. Someone has to get past Fernandinho, and then that gives them a chance. And it's not a direct one-on-one, and it may be going an angle or whatever. But, you know, we are really, really struggling. And it's just, you know, but you've seen it coming over the last season and a half. You can see what's happening. Teams get a lot more possession now against City. And they're creating chances, putting our defence under pressure. And our defence can't handle it.
What worried me yesterday was not just defensively, but going forward, we looked bereft of ideas. And there was one thing that kind of summed it up for me, because what we do so well, we use that gap between the fullback and the centre half so well. You know, there'll always be a bit of a gap there. We will get runners into that gap. And maybe it was because the way we were set up, the players we had. But we weren't passing well at all yesterday. We weren't particularly passing well against Wolves. We were doing the pressing, but we weren't passing. But yesterday it was woeful. And there was one incident for me that summed it up. Fernandinho was just on the right. He had the ball. I could see on the TV screen there was a gap between the Leicester centre-back and the full-back. And normally someone would have gone into that gap, but no one was going. And Fernandinho floated this ball over to Mendy on the left, which was absolutely pointless, because it just gave Leicester plenty of time to get organised. And they were very well organised. And it was, we're just not, Kevin De Bruyne, I've never, you know, I don't think I've rarely seen him hit so many ineffectual passes. Fernandinho is another one who you rely on for his passing ability. You know, some really poor passing. And there were so many times when we floated a ball from right to left, which just didn't do anything. It didn't take anyone out of the game. In fact, it gave Leicester a chance to reorganise. And, you know, watching them, how they moved, the five and the four, they were so organised and so together. And we were just playing into their hands by floating these aimless balls and no one making runs or you know, trying to break through that line. And, you know, it's what you would have expected Foden to do, but he was in the wrong position. And Kevin De Bruyne had a bit of a go occasionally, but, you know, there was, when he was doing it, there was no, seemed to be, you know, we weren't moving forward as a team. We weren't defending as a team, and we weren't moving forward as a team, which is kind of somewhat worrying a little bit.
Ooh. Well, guys, see if you could finish off these sentences for some interesting statistical information. This is the first time in 686 games that... ..
Teams had three penalties?
Nope.
City have conceded five at home?
No. That was going to be my next one. But it's the first time in 686 games that a side managed by Guardiola has conceded five goals.
Ah, mm-hmm. Right.
And just to follow up, it's the first time in 438 games at the Etihad that City have let in five goals. So
yes, because the last time we let in five was at Main Road against Arsenal.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
2002-3.
Absolutely. So, yeah, pretty dispiriting stuff, guys. But, Ray, there is perhaps a little silver lining in that we appear...
You've always got these silver linings from somewhere.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got like, I think City have signed a centre-back. Tell us about him.
Ruben Dias.
Yeah.
Yes, we've finally... I'll tell you the quick saga. We wanted Koulibaly, 70 million. We weren't going there for Koulibaly. We were offering around 55. Napoli wouldn't go down, lower the price. We stuck at it for far too long in the end. Then we started moving quickly. Jimenez, Atletico would not... we were never going to budge, it seemed, from their, was it, £110 million release clause. So we went for Koundé. I like the look of Koundé after speaking to a football analyst who watches La Liga. But once again, his club, Sevilla, didn't want to do the deal at the price we were offering, around 50, 55, and maybe Nicolas Otamendi. They were looking for nearer to, I think, 70 is what I heard. And then there was a Ruben Dias. Benfica were more receptive to our offer. They were happy for Otamendi to go the other way. The final numbers are €68 million for the purchase of Dias, with €3.6 million of add-ons. Otamendi going the other way for €15 million. Obviously, they're slightly exaggerated, those numbers, because they help in the accounts. They help on a profit on the sale of the player for both sides. Because Mendy, we were looking, you know, it was rumoured last week that Mendy might be going for €6 or 7 million. So by upping the price, we have a nice profit in our accounts. And the same for Benfica, their profit in their accounts is higher by selling Dias at €68 million instead of about, you know, 40, about 50 to 55. So they've done well. Dias, the one concern is, I mean, he's been likened to another Laporte. He's going to hit a good long ball. Which is excellent, which is something Koundé doesn't really do. Koundé's more your short pass and you know, getting your stats really high and not taking risks, and obviously having a decent leap and strength and everything else. But Ruben Dias, one issue is is when some his one on ones he's not so great. His aerial duels is okay, but he's another one who can hit a long ball, a good long pass, and it's interesting to note. It's something I hadn't picked up on, and it's something I think a lot of people don't pick up unless you're watching a lot of that particular player or you follow that league, is that when he plays for Benfica, he is the right-sided centre-back. When he plays for Portugal, and they're not a bad side either, he's a left-sided centre-back. So he has that little bit of versatility. I would never pick that up, and thanks to the... I'll give him a shout-out, Scott Martin, who's a... football analyst for Total Football Analysis. He follows La Liga. He told me a lot of stuff about Koundé, and because he's Portuguese heritage, he follows the Portuguese league as well, so he knows a lot about Ruben Dias. Ruben Dias, he says he is a leader. There's a lot to like about Ruben Dias. I just hope he makes a transition. I think he's 23 years old, so hopefully he's tall enough. I think 6'1", 6'2". So, you know, he's got a lot of qualities and attributes that look good. You know, I think from what I remember, he said, because I've talked about the issues with Stones and others switching off, and he said both Koundé and Dias don't tend to switch off. They're focused on the game and the fact he plays for Portugal in the Nations League. You know, that's obviously very positive sign. So I just hope he can come in and fit wherever, you know, either playing with Laporte or sometimes instead of Laporte, if we need to. You know, if we start putting Aki on the left because we've got no other options. But, yeah, it looks a very good addition. Yes, you know, I think we can quite categorically say he wasn't our first option or probably our second or third option, but he's still a good option, and that's good enough for me. He's going to wear the Sky Blue City, and I'm sure most fans... we'll get behind him.
Yeah, 23-year-old player, and if guys don't ever go to the the Marcotti and Julian Laurent show on ESPN, because you're just counting down the seconds. When I started to talk about this, about how to throw cold water on it. And Julian Laurent, who, of course, is a PSG fan, is particularly guilty of this. And he actually came out with a remark trying to compare Diaz with Victor Lindelof and saying that, yeah, he's great, isn't he? He's great, but he's great in Portugal, and so was Lindelof. Although there's a heck of a difference because, as Marcotti pointed out, you know, Ruben Diaz does have a large body of work behind him before this transfer, where of course Lindelof was just potential. And as we know, pretty unfulfilled potential even now. But we march on, guys. We dust ourselves down and march on. What's up next, Colin, for City?
Burnley on Wednesday.
And what do you think?
Carabao Cup.
Do you think about that? Well, I mean, is it much of a priority now? And who do you think will play?
I don't know. You know, if we've got players coming back from injury, it's a good chance to get them, give them an hour under their belt in a game that, let's be honest, I mean, we'd all love to win a fourth Carabao Cup, but
I don't really care about that.
I think we wouldn't want to sacrifice the chance of the league for the Carabao Cup. You know, we've got to put a good showing in the league this season. I think we'll see five or six of the kids. You know, we'll see Delap. Hopefully Tommy Doyle will start again, and Bernabe should be okay, I would hope. Although he didn't have a particularly good time. But anyway, you know, it's, you know, maybe Laporte will get some time. He was on the bench, but obviously if he'd been fully fit, he would have started. You know, who knows what will happen. But you know, we don't know what the injury situation is with some players.
I think Zinchenko will play. I think Zinchenko probably will start because he was on the bench. I hope Laporte starts just to get an hour under his belt before the game against Leeds at the weekend. So I'm hopeful those two. As Colin says, Liam Delap, Tommy Doyle. I'm just trying to see who else is coming back. Bernardo, I think it's too soon for him. I think I saw him training today, so I think it's going to be too soon. I'd rather save him for the weekend if he's got a chance of playing. But it's one of those, you know, I don't want to disrespect any competition, throw it away, because we never know what's going to happen in everything else. You know, we throw this away early, and you know, we might have a terrible season, and we'll be turning around wishing we hadn't. Burnley are going to prove a tough nut to crack. I believe they're going to probably play almost the first team. It's a great opportunity to get through to the quarterfinals. So they're going to do that. They know we're smarting a bit. You know, we're hurting, and we're still vulnerable. You've seen it in every game we played this season. We're vulnerable. But, you know, I think, you know, players, some of the kids, they're never going to get another chance, you know. And this is their opportunity to get through in another very tough game and try and get through to the quarterfinals and the semifinals. And then, you know, for the kids anyway, at least get a few more games under their belt.
And Colin, just remind us what's after Burnley at the end of the week.
Leeds away.
Interesting. Interesting.
That will be interesting. The Bielsa and Guardiola. Yeah, and I was thinking about the earlier today. You look at those penalties that we gave away on Sunday, and you think back to that game at Leeds where we won 2-1, and there was a pitch invasion. And there was an incident in that where Gordon McQueen took out Peter Barnes. It could not have been a clearer penalty, and it got waved away. Do you remember that? You've seen that?
Yeah, I just love the way. When was that game played?
77, I think.
Right. I just love the way that you said, yeah, that you remember that last game against Leeds, you know, where we won 2-1. And the game you're referring to was in 1977. But
I didn't say that last game. I said that game. But it was it just made me laugh thinking, watching the penalties, on Sunday, and thinking about that incident with, and I still can't understand to this day, you know, what is it now, 40 odd years on, how we didn't get a penalty for that. Anyway. You've got to laugh, haven't you? it will be a tough game. And look, you know, let's hope we've got a few more of our players back from injury. But it's, you know, if they're playing the first game, back from injury, that's not a place you really want to play, is it?
Let's finish off by going over to Ray, the transfer guru, to ask him the question which is on everyone's lips at the moment. Is it true that Zinchenko's on his way out and we are going to sign a left back?
Well, that's the word on the street this morning. That's, you know, let's be honest, Zinchenko's hung around, and given his due, he could have gone a couple of seasons back to Betis or Wolves. They'd all made their agreements, but he decided to stay 3 seasons back, and he got lucky with the injuries, and he ended up being a centurion and formidable, winning all those trophies. But he's at that stage where he's behind Mendy, which is a bit of a shock. He's behind Cancelo, and so what's his future? He's behind Angelino when Angelino is here. So he's not going to be playing in midfield. He's not good enough for that. So he's got to look at his future as well. And I think this time the time has come for Zinchenko. If we don't get 40 million for him, then I'll be hashtagging cheeky out. 40 million is the least we should be getting for Zinchenko. That's tongue in cheek, guys. But who are we going to get? That's the question. And you know, my number one choice is David Alaba, 29-year-old, playing for Bayern Munich. The rumour was he's available at about 30 million euros. He hasn't signed a new contract. He's in the last year of his contract. He's a left-back and a centre-back. He's been playing centre-back for Bayern Munich this season. But also the rumour is he doesn't want to come to the Premier League. So, but for the money, you know, it's a ridiculous, it's a steal for that price. And it would be nice to get one over on Bayern Munich and get, David Alaba for that price. Who else is out there? We've not got Ben Chilwell. He's moved on to Chelsea. You know, I threw a name out. That's apparently City were interested. I did something back in end of July, beginning of August, about a kid, an Algerian kid, Algerian-French kid called Rayan Nuri, who's playing at Angers in France, who's very exciting. What excites me about someone like him, because going forward, he's cracker. You know, I think he offers so much going forward. He's 19 years old. He's about 5'11", 5'10", 5'11", tall. And he's a dribbler. You know, he'll take people on. That's what he wants to do. He wants to take, he's like a winger, basically. He might need a bit of work on his defensive requirements, but going forward, he looks incredible. So he's another name to throw out there. But apart from those two, I can't, you know, there are one or two others. Is that fella Telles, I think. Looks like he's going to United. Is it Tagliafico? I don't know the other players too well. I haven't researched them. But, you know, right now, I think the left-back is a crucial thing for us. And it depends. I think the other thing it depends on is something that we don't know, the extent of Cancelo's injury. I actually don't know what injury he's got and how long he's going to be out for. And if he's going to be out for an extended period of time, they must have seen the way Mendy's been playing and said, we can't go into a season like, you know, with Mendy at left back. We need somebody else. And maybe that's what's pushing them to at this late stage. Because you think it's got to be a late decision. It has to have been a late decision to now suddenly change tack and look for a left back, where we haven't been looking so aggressively for a left back all summer long. And suddenly at the last minute, with, you know, just over a week to go in the transfer window, we're trying to buy somebody. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens if we can get Zinchenko out. A few teams are interested in him. And can we get a quality left back in?
Well, let's hope. Let's hope that we can get someone in who actually can defend. I think that's the main thing that we need. But anyway, guys, I think that's probably enough for now. You've had an hour of us, and you probably don't want to have to listen to another discussion like this again. And it's just, you know, been happening so often over the last season or so. But yeah, we've got it out of our system, I think, and we'll be in a much more chipper frame of mind after the game against Burnley. I'm absolutely sure about that. But anyway, let's just thank our two friends for their contributions. Ray, thank you so much for coming on.
Always a pleasure, Mike.
And Colin Savage, thank you so much for being here for us.
Yeah, well, obviously, I think we all thought it was going to be a difficult one. But, you know, you've got to do take the rough with the smooth.
There's a lesson for us all, guys, a lesson for us all. So let's stop here and finish off in the normal way. So have one on us, guys, and up the Blues. Up the Blues.